here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network alongside Matty Moe, Corey Parson, and Corey Schwartz in the house today. Greg Sussman, one more hour with you. OGs are up next. Corey, holding it down. This is nice. This is your Friday today.
Yeah, obviously I got a big weekend coming up. I'm going down to D.C., get my daughter, bring her up here for spring break, and I just found out a little while ago I have to get a dress for Easter Sunday. Why couldn't this be taken care of before she came up here? Now I got to go. I'm going to be dress shopping.
Corey, at least you can eat bread.
That's true.
We can't eat bread.
What size dress do you wear?
No, it's not for me.
Oh, sorry.
It's not for me. So we got that coming up, little Easter Sunday going on, spring break. So I'll bring her through next week. It'll be a good time. Hey, Corey, this week we had Coors Field, right? And everybody, you get to the DFS, you know, everybody's like, you got to stack the Rockies, you know, because they were going against Jarrett Weaver, and Jarrett Weaver, you know, is terrible. And my thing all season has been, when it comes to DFS, I really don't do a lot of playing, but I definitely avoid slates with Coors Field on it. Because everybody predicts these big run explosions at Coors Field, and the Rockies didn't score a single run last night. Jarrett Weaver, they scored 3 runs against Weaver the other night. So it's like
0 runs yesterday against Zach Lee.
How do you, obviously you look at the altitude, but how do you figure out Coors Field and what's going on?
Well, that's the irony, right? That, you know, in fantasy baseball, traditional roto, you're playing full season. You take your Coors Field with your San Diego, and it sort of works out in the wash. DFS, you're trying to hit on stuff like that. And when it doesn't, it stings, you know. But I think ultimately you're looking at those high run environments. You have to play those odds. You have to play those matchups. And maybe the problem with Jarrett Weaver was, remember that Bugs Bunny cartoon where he pitches so slow? And they go strike one, strike two, strike three. And they can't hit it that slow. I mean, maybe Jarrett Weaver is just throwing so slowly right now that it's at the bottom end of what a major leaguer can actually handle, because they're just not used to that slow stuff. But, you know, look, I think it's a good strategy to attack those high run environments, to attack those soft matchups. You're not always going to hit on that, otherwise we'd all be millionaires. But, you know, ultimately in DFS, you're trying to play the percentages and play the odds. I think more often than not, that's going
to
work.
When it comes to offense in Colorado, like, what does StatCast say? Is it?
Oh, forget about it. I mean, the ball, it's really true. It's really, how much the ball carries there.
Really, huh?
You know, it is a thing. Yeah, I mean, a good 20 or same launch angle, same exit velocity. You're going to get 20 or 30 feet more in Coors Field than you will anywhere else. Now, that's highly variable on a day-to-day basis. We found out that wind plays a huge, huge part. Mm-hmm. A direct tailwind can carry the ball 5 to 10 feet per 1 mile an hour. You may remember last year. I remember. Nomar Mazara hit an upper deck home run in Texas. And I think StatCast, we called it 490, 492 feet, something like that. And everybody went absolutely bananas. Like, no way was that a 500-foot home run. And we dug into it. We're like, are we crazy? Is this wrong? And we were able to get some weather station data from inside Globe Life Ballpark. And we found out that ball had a direct tailwind of close to 20 miles an hour.
Oh, so
he hit it exactly just right where the wind current took it. You know, the wind took it. And that gives it another 30 or 40 feet. So the wind is real. The air density is real. And we're starting to get data now to help us quantify that a little bit more specifically.
So when it comes to the StatCast, one of the things we've all noticed, and I think a lot of people watching baseball and analyzing baseball notice, that seemingly every pitcher's velocity is up this year. Oh, yeah. Shelby Miller is throwing 99 miles per hour this spring. or so we were told. And at least from what I had read, was that you guys were tracking the ball in a different spot than what we previously did. What does that mean?
Yeah, so the system we used to operate normalized pitch speeds to 50 feet from the back tip of home plate. Because that was a camera-based system, so you really couldn't get the ball exactly as it came out of the pitcher's hand. And that 50-foot measurement kind of matched up with what people were used to and seeing in baseball up to that point. You know, the top guys throwing 96, 98, something like that. If someone touched 100, that was like a once-a-week kind of thing.
Right.
The StatCast system is radar-based, samples at about 18,000 to 20,000 times per second, so we can really detect the ball as it comes right out of the pitcher's hand. So that's the value we report now across the board for all products, because it's more consistent. So whether you're watching a broadcast on TV, whether you're in the ballpark and looking for the pitch speed up on the scoreboard, watching game day at bat or any of our other devices, you're seeing that pitch speed as it's reported out of the pitcher's hand. Number one, because we have the technology to do that now. And number two, because it's a more consistent number across all of baseball. So you're going to see anything from a half a mile an hour to a mile an hour faster league-wide. Now, that being said, it doesn't mean that some guys aren't legitimately throwing harder, and it doesn't mean everybody's throwing harder. Some guys have lost velocity since the start of last season, but you make that slight adjustment in your head, and then it's pretty easy to figure out.
Well, that was my question. Great job, Greg. But just like,
answer it sufficiently?
No, you did. That was really something that I was very curious to know. I think the great thing that is with Statcasting helps it out. It's like with a Hollywood movie. You have to have those stars and those studs to lead the way. And you guys have like Giancarlo Stanton. You got Noah Syndergaard. I mean, I always see Darren on his Twitter page showing like Syndergaard how many times he's hit 100 or 98 plus throughout the season. So these are just wonderful things we get to play around with.
Yeah, and it really gives you an appreciation also for guys who defense is their primary skill. You know, they have offensive skills, but their defense is so exceptional. You know, you look at Kevin Kiermaier, whose defense is known at this point, how truly exceptional he is defensively in center field. And Adam Eaton is another guy that when we were doing a lot of research last year, he ended up with a lot of plays that ranked very highly in the system we built, the catch probability system. And we would go look at the video, and he wasn't making diving catches or leaping catches or whatever. He was just getting there and making the catch just in time. And we realized that his quickness, his reaction, his roots, his acceleration, all of the things that lead to getting the catch were so good that the catch itself looked kind of ordinary. And that's something we hope StatCast will do. We know Syndergaard is great. We know Giancarlo Stanton is great. But we can start to highlight some of these second and third tier players and say, wow, these guys are pretty good too. And we didn't even realize that.
What does StatCast have to say? I don't even know if this is a thing, so I might be making it up. But about knuckleballers. Because we had Stephen Wright go last night, and he didn't go very long. He lasted an inning and a third. 8 hits, 8 runs, allowed 4 home runs. It was a brutal outing for Stephen Wright. What does StatCast tell us about knuckleballs?
Knuckleballs are tough because the spin rate is so low that those pitches don't really follow a predictable model of physics. You know, a fastball or a slider that's traveling at, you know, 2,000 RPM or 2,500 RPM or whatever it may be, you know that those are going to follow the laws of physics. Knuckleballs spin so slowly that weather and air friction are able to influence those a lot more, and you don't get these sort of predictable movements out of knuckleballs that you do out of other pitches. So, you know, that stuff we're still trying to figure out. We're working on getting better weather data, you know, down to the second, see if we can get that at field level rather than, you know, at the top of the stadium, which is a couple hundred feet up there. That will start to tell us a lot about knuckleballs, but, you know, that's the next, you know, maybe a next great frontier.
Knuckleballs, the next great frontier.
There you go right there. So I'm looking at home run distance from this year, right? Number one is Carlos Gomez at 462, right?
Not bad.
Number two is Charlie Blackmon at 458. Guess who the pitcher was?
Don't tell me. Who'd Colorado play? Arizona? Zach Greinke?
No. The pitcher that threw the pitch.
I named the pitcher. It was a good guess.
No. It wasn't Zach Greinke.
All right. Yeah, I got to guess another one.
The pitch. I'll give you a hint.
I know it wasn't Jared Weaver.
The pitch speed was 78 miles an hour.
Yeah, right.
It was Jared Weaver.
Oh, it was?
So there you go right there.
but, you know, that brings up an interesting point. Remember when we were little and we were learning to play, you know, Little League, and the coach would say, don't swing too hard. Let the pitcher do the work for you.
Sure.
That's not really true. Most of the exit velocity comes from bat speed. Very little of it actually comes from the pitch, somewhere around 17 or 18%. And once you realize that, it all makes sense. Think about all the times that somebody throws a 98-mile-an-hour fastball and the batter swings as hard as he can and hits a little nubber, you know, and then think of a 95-mile-an-hour fastball and the guy bunts and it goes nowhere. The pitch adds something, you know, because it's adding force into that, you know, that point of contact, but bat speed is really what adds to the exit velocity. And then you look at a guy like Giancarlo Stanton, you know, who's pretty much the king of exit velocity. He's the Aroldis Chapman of exit velocity. He's so big and so strong, and he just generates incredible bat speed. That's where that exit velocity comes from.
Well, let me ask you, because we saw a scary situation the other day with Buster Posey getting beamed. So the pitch was 94 miles an hour. As a layman, I'm always thinking, if you see the ball coming, especially towards your head, you can get out the way.
It's tough, you know.
How much, like, the reaction, how much do you have to, like, see, okay, wait a minute, this pitch is high, oh my God, it's going
to
hit me.
Your average major league fastball reaches the pitcher's hand to the front of home plate in about 0.4 seconds.
Wow.
Almost a third of that time, your brain hasn't even seen the ball yet. So, you know, the pitch comes out of the pitcher's hand, it's going to go about 15 or 20 feet before your brain can even process there's an object there.
Yeah.
Then you've got another, you know, 0.1 to 0.2 seconds to decide what you want to do. And then you've got to do it. So, you know, that's why, you know, look, we don't advocate pitchers throwing at hitters. But,
yeah.
All right, if you're going to throw inside, throw down here.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you hit me in the ribs or maybe you hit me in the butt, you know,
yeah.
where I've got a little bit more padding. You don't throw up and in. And that's why, because the batter has so incredibly little time to not only understand what he needs to do, but to react to it and get out of the way. You know, the fact that anybody can hit a pitched baseball as well as some of these guys do is astonishing to me.
That's crazy.
And the other thing with the hitting part of it, like I mentioned Stanton before, we got Aaron Judge who looks like a Giancarlo Stanton in a Yankee uniform,
yeah.
and is hitting these mammoth home runs, but he hit the hardest single yesterday in the sixth inning, and I mean, it's just getting to see all this kind of great stuff is great, and even the night before with Cespedes when he had that three home run night, and you guys show how it was barreled up and stuff like that. I think these are all just great things that we can take, we can use, and, you know, it just keeps getting better and better.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned, you know, Aaron Judge with a single. One of the things we found is that there's diminishing returns on exit velocity because to really hit it at the maximum exit velocity, the ball and the bat have to meet flush. But that means you don't get as much backspin and you don't get the loft that creates a fly ball. So once you get up to around 115, you actually want to not hit it any harder than that. You want to hit it a little less and get under the ball a little more and get some loft. So most of the hardest hit balls in the StatCast era have been line drives and groundouts.